A very big sports story is happening.
Tyler Bischoff is...
If a very big sports story was happening, we'd know it.
We do know it. We just don't understand it.
You don't understand it.
Technically correct.
Welcome back to Technically Correct. We have Tim Ryerson.
Hello.
In studio. UNLV soccer royalty.
Well, I do enjoy it over there, that's for sure, yeah.
At least the family name is UNLV soccer royalty.
Correct, yes. Four brothers went to UNLV.
Wait,
to play
do you
soccer.
Feel like the outcast because you left after 1 year?
Well, you know, at times I do, but I'm the number one fan, I think, for UNLV soccer.
For those of you that don't know, four different Ryerson brothers played at UNLV in the 80s. Rich Ryerson, your brother, now the head coach at UNLV, but you left to go to UMBC after 1 year. So that's why Tim Ryerson is the outcast. But growing up, which of the Ryerson brothers was the best at soccer?
Oh, you're putting me in a bind there right away. You're going to start with that. All of us were different types of players, for sure.
But who was the best?
Well, if we talked about stats, I mean, you could go that way. Rob scored a lot of goals. But Rich, as a defender, scored a lot of goals and had a lot of assists. And he played in the most games.
So Rich.
It depends.
Sure.
Don't tell Rob that, but
okay, I won't. What was growing up, what was like the most common thing to cause fights among you guys?
I wasn't prepared for this line of questioning, but obviously we always were competitive. We normally played stuff 2-on-2, and so there was always something going on. But we didn't fight a ton, you know. So really, it was peaceful for having five kids. My oldest is a sister. Actually, Karen is the oldest, and she kind of kept everybody in check.
Oh, I see. The older sister was there to make sure you guys were behaving.
That's correct.
So Tim's here. You guys have with Get on the Bus, after school program for kids. So basically, the premise is you guys want to make soccer as accessible to kids as possible.
Yeah, I mean, we found that we're pricing kids out of youth sports, any youth sport, not only soccer.
That's an interesting part to me with soccer, because that is conceivably the cheapest sport you can play. It's not like hockey where you need a ton of equipment or ice or like that, but even kids are getting priced out of soccer, too.
Yes, and I think, you know, obviously there's professional coaching involved now,
yeah.
And that drives the price a little bit as well. There's a lot of travel as well to go to games, especially here in Nevada. To go find competition, you have to travel a bit. But yeah, the pay-to-play model, and also we found that transportation was an issue. So it really doesn't matter if you can't afford it, if you can't get there. So there's actually two barriers. One is transportation, getting kids from, you know, school or home to a soccer activity, and the other is the financial piece. So we're trying to break down those barriers.
So what do you guys come in and do to try to bridge those gaps?
Sure. Well, we'll form a partnership, and there's a couple different partnerships to make it happen. But we'll come into like a Title I school, in this case in Vegas, Paradise School, right by UNLV, which is awesome. And basically we'll give the kids a complete uniform. So it's a jersey, shorts, socks, shin guards, cleats, a soccer ball, a bag, that's all free, because we've been able to secure a pretty large grant from U.S. Soccer. U.S. Soccer knows that this is an issue and that all kids can't play because of those two things. So we've been able to use some funding from them. They have an Innovate to Grow Fund. And then also there's local sponsors, regional sponsors, and national type of sponsors that want to get behind the program. So we're really excited about that as well.
So you guys launched this in Baltimore, correct?
Just outside of Baltimore, Ellicott City.
And now this is the first year that it's in Vegas, right?
Correct.
So, if somebody wants to, like, hey, I want my kid to get involved and get a free soccer ball and everything, like, what, like, how does it work?
Sure. So we have an application process. So we pick Title I schools that we go into, obviously Paradise being one to start. And then we do an application process for the fourth and fifth graders. And so they just need to fill out the application and provide some basic information. So we'll start at Paradise. We're in that process now. We're going to go to Paradise School tomorrow and talk to the fourth and fifth graders. And we're looking to actually serve 50 kids this fall, starting on September 21st. So we've put it out there, and we're looking forward to it.
So when you have things like the Women's World Cup this year and the World Cup the previous year, like, when you're working with youth kids playing soccer, how do you see the levels of their interest or their involvement sort of take off with those types of events?
Sure. I mean, obviously with the Women's World Cup, we saw a huge spike in the amount of people following them. Also after, as a result of the World Cup, the Women's League, the attendance is up. So for us, that's a great sign on the women's side. As far as the men's side, with us hosting in 2026, I just think it's going to continue to grow, not only at the youth level, but, those that want to play professionally or try to play in the World Cup. So I think, I've seen so much growth since the 80s in soccer, and it's going to continue to grow. I mean, you see the lights, with the amount of fans that they're drawing. So it's just going to continue to grow.
Have you been to a lights game?
I have.
Were you there on Saturday?
I was not there for the balloon fight. We were doing a fun we were doing a fundraiser for Get on the Bus over at the Rerah. So I wasn't able to be in both places, but I heard it was fun.
How do you feel about lights games when they have things like a water balloon fight at halftime, or like their next home game, they're dropping $10,000 out of a helicopter for people to run around and get?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting, right? I mean, it's different than what I experienced when I went to professional games as a youngster. But in the same light, it is drawing folks to their games. And so, it's interesting what they come up with. I want to meet some of those marketing guys and see how they can help with the Get on the Bus, because they're doing a great job over there marketing.
Wait, would Get on the Bus, would you guys have more kids if you had soccer practice and then a water balloon fight afterwards?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure there would be a lot more participation if we were able to work that in.
So with you, I want to ask you a little bit about UNLV soccer, since Rich is coaching there.
Sure.
He's got to get in the NCAA tournament this year, right?
I mean, I think he's got, I'm going to say, 13 new players from what I understand, but he lost quite a few players as well. But what I like about the Running Rebels is they're never out of it. So, they seem to rise to the occasion to the playoffs, the WAC playoffs. And so they always have a chance to be in the NCAA tournament.
I know it was 3 seasons ago when Danny Masofsky got hurt for the first half of the year and then came back, and they were, I think, like 10-12-1 or something, but ended up winning the WAC tournament, going to the NCAA tournament. They got to do it again, though. It's been like 2 years.
Well, it was actually 2016 and 2018.
Yeah.
So they're primed and ready. I swung by their training this morning, and they were working hard. And so we'll see how it works out for them. But I think they've got a chance.
I asked you which brother was the best player. Which brother is the best coach now?
Rob coaches and Rich coach. They coach at different levels, Rich being at the university and Rob working with youth soccer. So, again, it's a little bit different when you're dealing with youth and collegiate players.
Wait, Rich hasn't reached out to try to make a Ryerson, just the entire coaching staff is all Ryersons?
That's a great question, because Rob does have collegiate experience, and I'm sure he'd be fine. I would get in on the administrative side of things.
Okay, you don't want to be one of the assistant coaches.
No, not with those guys.
I think it'd be a nightmare for players if every single coach was a Ryerson brother.
It'd be fun. I'm going to have to ask Rich if he asked Rob
to be one of his coaches?
On his staff.
I hope Rob told him, you can't pay me enough.
That's probably what Rob would say, but again, I'll have to follow up and see.
All right, if you do soccer consulting, right?
Yes, I do.
For teams and coaches. Yes. You've seen Lights play a few times. What advice would you give Eric Winalda? I'll tell you this, they can't win on the road. They have one win in 12 road games this year. They can't win on the road. So what would be your advice to helping them win on the road?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to tell Eric Winalda how to coach
his team.
Oh, you
can't. No, they're not even in the playoffs. Yeah. Tell him
how
to coach.
We do it, and we're morons.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, I do know some of his coaching staff. I know Augie.
Yep.
Actually, Augie coached my son, Trevor, in Southern California at one time. I'm a big fan of Augie, so maybe he could listen to Augie more. I don't know.
So the advice is take more advice from Augie. I bet Eric doesn't. I bet Eric thinks, no, I got this.
No, I'm sure they consult about a lot of things. I know Augie's been with him for some time, and they're a great duo. So I think it's just a matter of time. We need to be patient and see how it works out for them.
Tim Ryerson here with us, Get on the Bus, bringing that to Las Vegas, helping kids get into soccer. So the World Cup's coming in 2026. Do you guys have any goals in the next few years is what you want to accomplish with Get on the Bus?
Sure. Yeah. We set the goal for 10,000 kids, which is a lofty goal to serve 10,000 kids.
How many do you have in Elliott City right now?
So we've served, I think, close to 200 kids now already. We're at the very beginning of, we just started the program last spring, two springs ago. And again, now I have states reaching out to us because U.S. Soccer gave us that grant, and now other states. I just spoke to Connecticut, Louisiana, Cal North, Cal South are now asking about this program and this funding from U.S. Soccer. So it's taking off, and so we're going to buckle up and enjoy the ride.
So it might not be your exact goal, but with funding from U.S. Soccer, sort of what's the idea of, you know, making soccer more accessible at the youth levels and that translating to the U.S. national teams, on the men's side at least, being, you know, more competitive or across the world?
Sure. I just think there's pockets and places where we're not reaching kids, and it's because of these two barriers that we're not reaching them. So it's not really our intent to go out and find the next Pulisic or, you know, Donovan. You know, it's our intent to serve as many kids as possible. Of course, out of the 10,000, there's going to be kids that can play. And then we have the ability to place them in the right place, whether it's a club or in the national pool. You talk about the brothers coaching. Rob has coached in the youth national, U16 and U18 level. So if there's kids out there that we reach that are at that level, we can certainly push them in the right direction in terms of having them have opportunities.
How confusing is the soccer structure in this country for, like, where you should be playing or what you should be playing for kids?
Oh, it's very confusing.
Like,
it's
every time I don't understand, and every time I'm just like, I don't know what's happening.
No, I mean, you really need to know, and it's always changing. The landscape has changed so much over the years, and there's different leagues and different associations. There's different governing bodies now underneath U.S. Soccer. So it's a lot to keep up with, but at the end of the day, I think it's all been good change, and we've come such a long way, so it's exciting to see. Mm-hmm. And heading into the World Cup, just real quick, just want to point on that. You know, there's so many potential partners and sponsors out there that can help support and find these and reach these kids. And because, you know, these businesses and services want to reach the soccer families because they spend a lot of money. And so you know, I see a lot of people jumping on board. You see Volkswagen now as the sponsor for U.S. soccer and things like that. More and more that's going to help. And so if we can tap into a little bit of that, we can reach more kids.
Well, he is Tim Ryerson, UNLV. We'll let you be UNLV soccer royalty.
I'm the biggest fan, that's for sure. When Rich got the job, there weren't a whole lot of people watching. But I was there.
Rich saved the program. It was the Ryerson saved the program.
I mean, Rich is great at that. You didn't ask me who the best fundraiser is.
Okay, who's the best fundraiser?
I'll give it to Rich.
That's
the easiest question.
You got U.S. soccer, though. You might be coming for him.
Yeah, but I didn't save a program like he did, for sure. And it means so much to the alumni. And, you know, I consider myself an alumni. I grew up watching those guys play at UNLV. Barry Bartow was a big influence in our family. And it gave us an opportunity to do what we love.
So it's Get on the Bus. He's Tim Ryerson. Tim, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for your time.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Antonio Brown lost his second helmet grievance.
Poor Antonio Brown. Ian Rappaport reporting that. Now he has to find a new helmet and is not going to retire just yet. But Pro Football Talk reported that Antonio Brown is going to get a custom-made helmet with an endorsement deal. Thank God.
Yeah.
Some helmet company did the smart thing. Or I guess it's multiple. Drew Rosenhaus said they have multiple offers. I mean, that's a complete no-brainer.
Some account executive actually did their job by following what is going on.
Like, that is the minute you see Antonio Brown can't wear his preferred helmet, every single helmet company should have called him and said, "What? We will make you a helmet. You will have one-of-a-kind helmet." Every single helmet company should have done that. And it looks like they did. So that's a good job. Now we just need Antonio Brown commercials for these helmet companies where they just mock the entire story. Like, Antonio Brown is like, I was going to retire, but then Schutt stepped up with the Antonio Brown 2019. Wait, what if his custom helmet fails NFL testing?
Oh, man.
That would be amazing.
What if the NFL is just vindictive?
Every helmet, he's like, I want to wear this one. Failed. I want to wear this one. Failed.
Fine, I'll wear this one. And they're like, no, we just retroactively failed it.
Wait, but that's the one Derek Carr's wearing. He's failed, too. None of your teammates can play.
The Raiders place Doug Martin on injured reserve.
He's expected to be released soon and will likely sign somewhere else because he's healthy. But hop on board the Josh Jacobs train. It is going to be Josh Jacobs, Jalen Richard, and DeAndre Washington as the Raiders running backs. Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington, it's probably selling them a little bit short, but they're pass-catching backs.
Well, I thought Jacobs was also supposed to be a pass-catching back.
Josh Jacobs is both. It's supposed to be both. That's why everybody was like, yeah, he's the best running back in the draft, because he projects as, hey, you can give him 15 carries and you can throw it to him 8 times in a game.
Man, so, he is the best running back in the draft, 3rd round grade.
Yes. So Josh Jacobs is going to get like 20 touches a game. No doubt about it. Absolutely. And here's the thing. This is what you have to, if you take a running back in the 1st round, this is what you have to do.
Yep.
Like, you have to just feed him, because the value of the running back on his rookie deal is incredible. And here's what you're hoping for. You have to hope that Josh Jacobs ends up holding out like Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott are. That's what you're hoping for, because what that means is that Josh Jacobs is awesome for like 3, maybe 4 years, and is like, hey guys, I deserve to be paid a lot more because I'm awesome. And they're like, no, running backs, we don't pay those. But that's what you're hoping for. Like, you're hoping in 3 or 4 years Josh Jacobs is holding out, because what that means is Josh Jacobs was incredible for 3 years and the Raiders just gave him all of the carries he could handle. That's what you're hoping for. The fun thing is that at Alabama last year, Josh Jacobs had 120 carries. He was 3rd most on Alabama in carries last year. He's probably going to double that in his rookie season in the NFL.
Oh, man. This is going to be bad, isn't it?
Why? I think he's going to be good.
Well, don't... I thought, like, most rookies sort of hit a wall around week 12.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
Although, I guess if he played at Alabama, he's used to hitting that wall somewhere in January.
That is true, though. There might be a, like, good Lord, this is a lot of games. Why are we still playing? Where is Coastal Carolina in November?
The Raiders sign Corey Legit?
Legit.
Legit. Oh, like the new stadium.
Yes. Corey Legit. Allegiant Stadium. Yeah, it's pretty good. Corey Legit was a 1st-round pick in 2011 and then was basically a 7-year starter for the Chargers. But last year, he missed 4 games due to a failed PED test and suspension, and then he had an injury, so he ended up only playing 6 games last year. But he's a defensive tackle, and I think this is going to be, like, to me, there's no real loss with this signing, because conceivably, he might be the best defensive tackle on the team. Like, he's 29, he's got a lot of NFL experience, and, like, you got to beat out Jonathan Hankins and Mo Hurst. Like, conceivably, he could be the best defensive tackle on the team, so I like it from that potential upside. What's probably going to happen, he's going to end up being as good as Hankins and Hurst, and so he gives you depth, but not really improving the overall talent level of the team, but he could end up being really good. So I like it. I'm surprised he wasn't already signed by somebody.
Got to keep him off the gas station boner pills.
That is one of the few stories I wish we were doing a national show.
I just wanted us to, I wanted to bring them in and just be like, now, live on the air, gotta take some gas station PEDs. Siobhan Cordero came off the bench to lead Hawaii to a win over Arizona.
Cole McDonald is Hawaii's starter. Against Arizona, he completed 70% of his passes and had 378 yards in the 4th quarter.
also 4 touchdowns. But he had thrown 4 picks as well. So Nick Rolovich was like, all right, Siobhan Cordero, get in there. Siobhan Cordero goes 5 of 7, 78 yards, 1 touchdown, and Hawaii beats Arizona. It's almost like last season when Cordero crushed UNLV. If you don't remember.
No. Hold on, though. McDonald's stat line was not
that bad. That is the key difference here, because if you don't remember, UNLV was beating Hawaii in the fourth quarter last year 28-13. Cole McDonald got pulled because Cole McDonald was 14 of 30 with no touchdowns and 2 picks against UNLV's defense. Not only is UNLV's defense bad, that was the first game Drew Techman flipped from wide receiver to safety. And he had one of those 2 interceptions. And Cole McDonald was just could not do. He was just flummoxed. He's like, this is the greatest defense I've ever seen. It's like, I think it was his worst stat line of the entire season for Cole McDonald. Like, Cole McDonald is really good. But Siobhan Cordero came in, and Hawaii was like, just run past him. We're going to throw it deep. And he went 4 of 5 for 153 yards and 3 touchdowns. And Hawaii came back from 28-13 to win 35-28 in the fourth quarter.
He threw one pass too many for it just to not the perfect stat line. 3 of 4 for 3 touchdowns every pass.
So, like, I don't know what Hawaii's quarterback situation is, because Cole McDonald's been the starter, but every time Siobhan Cordero plays, he is awesome. Like, this has happened a few times where those are the 2 times where he's come back and won a game. But every time he comes into a game in the second half, his stat line is incredible. And you're like, are you sure this guy's not better than Cole McDonald? And then Cole McDonald the next game is going to go 21 of 22 for 5 touchdowns and no picks. But I don't know what their quarterback situation is, because they just bring Siobhan. They should just bring him in every fourth quarter.
No, that's what I'm saying is I want there to be a 2-quarterback system at Hawaii, but instead of the traditional 2-quarterback system of this guy's my read option dude and this guy's my passing dude. It's no, they both can pass.
It's the baseball version. Cole McDonald is the starter. He's going to get us through 8 innings. Here comes the closer, Siobhan Cordero.
Dejan Jakovic was recalled by LAFC.
Jakovic. On the end.
Could you put an H then?
No. That's how it's spelled. Bob Bradley can go to hell. Dejan Jakovic was loaned to Las Vegas.
I got Dejan right. Come on.
Yeah, and you got Jakov right too. You just missed the ch.
I got Doug Martin right.
Yeah, good job. So Dejan Jakovic was loaned to the Lights, played 1 game, and then LAFC recalled him. It's the second time LAFC have loaned him to Vegas and then recalled him. The first time he played 3 games, and then LAFC had an injury, he might have 2 injuries, to the center back position, so they recalled Dejan Jakovic. He was there for a while, even started a game, came off the bench in a couple. But this time, 1 game in Vegas, then LAFC says, hey, we need you back, because they're playing LA Galaxy last night in El Tráfico, the greatest name rivalry in the history of sports. He was not in the starting lineup and was not on the bench.
Did he miss his flight?
I don't know, but what the hell is Bob Bradley doing? Like, why are you loaning a guy to a USL team and then saying, oh, no, we need him, but then he's not even on the bench? Like, I could understand, okay, we need him on the bench because he's our third center back, and if one of our other 2 center backs get hurt in the game, he's got to go in. He wasn't even on the bench.
I got nothing,
Bob
man.
Bob Bradley can go to hell.
This is just stupid.
Just sell him to Lights FC.
Can we afford him?
I don't.
Lights FC beat Portland Timbers 2 on Saturday.
1-0, your final score. It was quite boring, but
They won!
They won, and Portland Timbers 2 had a player get a red card, not Lights FC.
Well, you only get red cards on the road.
That's a good point. I was saying last week they need 17 points to get to the playoffs. They got to win, so they need 14 points to probably clinch a playoff spot over their last 10 games. So that's 5 wins and 5 losses for Lights FC to get to, that would get you over 14 points, or 4 wins, 2 draws, and 4 losses. Both of those sound doable if you ignore the fact that they can't win on the road. Now, they do have 5 home games and 5 road games left, so conceivably, they can just win out at home and they would probably be in the playoffs with one road win the entire season. It would be glorious, but we'll see.
I almost wish they wouldn't have won that game if that's how it goes. I mean, they need it, obviously, to get into the playoffs, but...
The more important part of this game was the water balloon fight.
Yeah.
I wasn't in it.
Oh.
I failed everyone. So what they did was...
sent you even a text. Like, I know. Make sure you go...
So here's the 35th minute. They were like, everybody line up in section one for the 35th minute. And it was literally just line up on the stairs of section one. And so I went and lined up. And when halftime came and the players left the field, they started like letting people walk out on the field to get ready for the water balloon fight. Well, the water balloon fight started, and I hadn't even made it off the stairs of section one yet.
All those, what, $2 tequilas? You were
I guess.
Like, you weren't on...
I don't know. I barely made it down. So
did
like,
you try pushing?
Little kids out of the way? No, yeah. That probably would have been bad. So, like, I didn't make it. I wasn't there. Like, half the people that got in line to do it didn't make it before all the water balloons were gone. But what was great is because all of this is always a disaster. Lights FC is having this water balloon fight. And the guy on the PA system is like, don't throw water balloons into the crowd. Immediately, just water balloons into the crowd. And I wish, I honestly wish that it had just been, hey, come onto the field. You're going to chuck water balloons into the crowd. Like, I wish it had been on the field versus the crowd. I think that would have been better. Like, you don't have an option. You're in the water balloon fight. You don't get a choice here. You're just in it regardless. And then, so they have the water balloon fight.
Parkas, get the parkas sponsored.
They have the water balloon fight. They have to get everybody off the field. The best part was they had people on their hands and knees trying to pick up the broken water balloons off the field.
Oh, God.
Like, there are going to be broken water balloons on that field for the end of time. That's how this is going to happen. They're never going to get all this. They came out with a blower at one point. But it had an extension cord plugged into it. It wasn't even like a blower that had a battery. So they're like running an extension cord out of the dugout trying to blow some of this out.
A white oscillating fan.
We'll get this eventually.
The Las Vegas Aces are on a two-game losing streak.
The Aces are in trouble. On Friday, they blew a 13-point second-half lead to the Connecticut Sun. And with that loss, their chances at grabbing a top two seed and the bye straight into the semifinals basically killed off. Because with four games left, they are two back in the loss column of the Connecticut Sun for the number two seed, and Connecticut has the tiebreaker. There's four games left. So the Aces have to go basically 3-1 while Connecticut goes 0-4, or 4-0 while Connecticut goes 1-3. But now that they lost to Minnesota on Sunday, they're now just a half game ahead of the Chicago Sky for the four seed. And the four seed gets a bye. The five seed has to play single elimination with the eight seed just to get to the next round. The Aces do have the tiebreaker with the Chicago Sky, so that is at least one good benefit. But if they're probably going to need to win at least two, maybe three of their last four games to be the four seed and not fall to the five seed. And if they fall to the five seed, that's a failure of a regular season for this team. Complete failure. If this team is a five seed, like, they should have been a one or a two seed. That's already disappointing. For them to be the three or four, okay, we'll live with that. Especially Asia Wilson got hurt for a while. Okay, we'll live with that. But for them to fall to a five seed, that's just a disaster of a regular season in the sport where there's such a reward for finishing higher in the regular season. Because here's the thing. If they're the five seed, they're not going to win the WNBA title. Because if you're the five seed, you have to beat the eight seed in a single elimination game at home.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to go on the road and beat the four seed in a single elimination game. And then you're going to have to go on the road to either the one or the two seed and play them just to get to the finals. That's not going to happen. They've only had this format for like 2 years. It's always the one or the two seed that wins.
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!